Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hey, sweetie, your mother showed me this Carvana thing for selling the car. I'm going to give it a try. Wish me luck. Me again. I put in the license plate. It gave me an offer. Unbelievable. Okay, I accepted the offer. They're picking it up Tuesday from the driveway. I haven't even left my chair. It's done. The car is gone. I'm holding a check. Anyway, Carvana, give it a whirl. Love ya.
So good, you'll want to leave a voicemail about it. Sell your car today on
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
Hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth. Taking you through this Thursday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. A game day morning for the Titans and the Colts. We're going to have you covered all morning long here on that matchup. A huge matchup in the AFC South between the Titans and the Colts. A really cool thing we're doing to begin the 8 o'clock hour. We're going to join 107.5 The Fan in Indianapolis with their fan morning show and debate back and forth between Indy and Nashville. What's the game going to look like tonight? What are we looking for in this contest? You can hear that both here in Nashville and in Indianapolis. So some cross-city love, maybe not as much love, but some cross-city discussion that we're doing tonight, or in about an hour, Joe. Really looking forward to that.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Is your trash-talking game prepared?
Is that what it's going to be?
Well,
we're going to start?
Well, it could be a little bit of that. I don't know. I am going to make a comment about Philip Rivers' attempt to tackle. I mean, it was it really made me – that was the first instance where I saw somebody in an NFL game where I was like, yeah, that's probably what I'd look like trying to do that out there. It made me really connect to Philip Rivers on a different level.
Yeah, it was – I like how he sort of groped even way after the guy was gone. He still
just
sort
like,
of had his arms
up there. I think the starfish analogy that I threw out there earlier in the week, pretty appropriate.
That was pretty
on
good.
On that one by Philip Rivers. Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in our good friend Ryan McGee from ESPN, also co-host of Marty and McGee. Ryan, what's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm good. We're getting our tropical storm rain here in the Charlotte area, but that's all right. It's in the last 24 hours, as far as I know, no more SEC games have been postponed, so that's good.
Yeah, exactly. The week of craziness in the SEC, and as you know, I mean, this is SEC country. Here in Nashville, Ryan, we love watching SEC football. Not going to be a whole lot of that this weekend around college football. Was something like this happening in the SEC just inevitable at some point, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think it was. And, in fact, we had Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the SEC, on Marty McGee last night. And should be re-airing, by the way, this morning on SEC Network, if anybody's not listening to you guys. And the first question I posed, I said, was this weekend – inevitable, because it always kind of felt like it was. And his response was measured, as it will be with Greg. But what he said was, he said, yes, you knew that weekends were coming like this, but you didn't think it was going to be this much all at once. And so, you know, I think that's just a very polite way of saying, yeah, we knew it was coming, but that didn't make it any more fun. And so, yeah, it was inevitable. I mean, it is what it is. If you watched the American or the ACC or the Big 12 or the other conferences that started, the independent schools that started before that, it was like this for them at some point. And for a lot of them, for whatever reason, it was at the beginning as opposed to now. And, I'll just say this. Apparently, they have really good Halloween parties on SEC campus.
Apparently so.
That was going to be my question, is, you know, what does this mean? You know, is it like we've talked about the inevitability of sort of this cycling through, but it does feel like maybe this is actually a Halloween thing. But also, of course, the virus, things are not going well in a lot of parts of this country. And what do you think it means moving forward, Ryan? I mean, I think the SEC obviously has faced the reality there is no way it's going to get all these games in. I mean, that's pretty much impossible now unless you really stretch things back. But are you worried about where things are going here?
Well, it's not – I don't know if it could get worse than this weekend, but I think that there could be other weekends like this one. I mean, the reality is you know, and I feel like we're going to have this conversation with you guys every week. I mean, people can say whatever they want. It's 1,000 people a day are dying from this thing. And I don't care how old they are. I don't care where they live. I don't care, you know, why they were exposed or whatever. But that's what the number is, 1,000 people a day. And so that's why you have to be careful with this thing. Because, and I've said to you guys before, it's not even about the 19 and 20-year-olds on the football team, although we still don't know what the long-term effect of this thing will be, you know, if you've contracted it. It's about the people they come in contact with. And, you know, if you talk to university administrators, and I would certainly put ADs and coaches in that group, you know, what they're nervous about is, you know, everybody's trying to get to Thanksgiving. All the college campuses are just trying to get to Thanksgiving. They're on this accelerated timetable. And then they send all the students home. And that's probably going to be a problem, you know, when those students go home. And so those are the things that they're worried about. So that's a really long way of saying this is not the last weekend that is going to be sideways for the SEC. I don't know if it's going to be this many games. I don't know that it's going to be a game of the magnitude of LSU-Alabama. Although I will say this, I don't think LSU is going to work really hard to reschedule this game because I think everybody knew how that was going to go.
Ryan McGee from ESPN on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, Ryan, as you can imagine, Jeremy Pruitt in Tennessee, they've lost four games in a row. They lose to Arkansas this past Saturday. And Tennessee fans are very bent out of shape this week. And the response you're getting from them is basically, you know, Sam Pittman comes in year one and already has Arkansas in a better spot than Tennessee right now, which, you, as you can imagine, isn't going over well here. Where do you think this? Where do you think this is going for the rest of this season and into the immediate future with Jeremy Pruitt at Tennessee?
Well, it's interesting because as you guys were calling, I was actually sitting here. I was not watching The Mandalorian this week because it's Thursday and not Friday. But I was listening to our friend John Adams over in Knoxville in his podcast. And the reason I was listening is the headline was, who are the top candidates to be Jeremy Pruitt's scapegoats for Tennessee failure? And the good news is John hasn't changed a bit since I was in college. But it's a fair question. And, you know, this is where it is now, which is the question isn't what's this year going to be. The question is what are you going to try to do to fix it? And, you know, there already has been one, you know, big-time firing on that staff, and I think there's probably some more coming. But, yeah, it's a mess, and I get it. And you know, I'll say this. Chad Morris and I famously, there was a billboard somewhere in Arkansas with a big pop-out quote from me, like from a movie poster. I love the Chad Morris hire or something like that, you know. And obviously that didn't work out at Arkansas. But he can recruit. And so there was talent in the building when he got there. And Eli Drinkwitz will tell you that you know, there was a lot of talent in the building at Missouri when he got there. And so, you know, sometimes you walk into a little better situation talent-wise, but Pruitt's also not exactly in his first year. So, yeah, that's a really long way of saying I totally get where the frustration comes from. And as you guys know, I'm a grad, and my wife is from Knoxville. So this is the question and the phone calls that I'm receiving multiple times a day right now from people I'm related to.
Yeah, so when people talk about – it doesn't take long. I mean, it was early in his second season we were trying to calculate Jeremy Pruitt's buyout, you know, so
it
doesn't take long. But you mentioned more changes. I mean, I do feel like it's not been a good year for Jim Chaney. And even when Jeremy Pruitt sort of talks about play calls after games, I wonder a little bit about that. I mean, what do you think about that as a potential area of change?
No, I agree with that. And I think that the hints have already been dropped. And listen, at the end of the day, and this is the part that we've talked about this before, I was really curious when Pruitt got the job. I knew he knew football. Like, he can call plays. He knows what was a good call and what was a bad call. But what I didn't know about was the CEO part, was this kind of stuff, was handling the psychology of a locker room and handling the psychology of, you know, your coaching staff when you're all sitting or watching film at 1 o'clock in the morning and handling the boosters and handling the media and all those things. And so, you know, I felt like he was doing a much better job of that leading into this year, but now he's kind of in this, I mean, this is the situation that burned Butch Jones to the ground. And he did it to himself in large part because he did not know how to handle this situation. And he would sit every morning and read everything that was being written about him. And so, I'm really curious going forward to see how Pruitt handles this. But, yeah, I think that no one on that staff is safe because he's a football coach, and he can look at the X's and O's. The one thing he knows, he can look at the X's and O's and go, well, that didn't work. Why are we doing this? And I told you not to do that. And so, as a result, that's where the changes are going to be.
Ryan McGee from ESPN, co-host of Marty and McGee, on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ryan, it's been a rough go of it the last couple of weeks for Michigan, and a lot of Michigan fans talking about Jim Harbaugh right now and his future with the Wolverines. Do you think he's in any trouble there at all, in danger of losing his job?
I think he is in trouble there, and I think that he also wants to do something else. Like, when I talk to my friends that cover Michigan on a daily basis, you know, in the past it's been, well, what can we do to fix this? And right now he's starting to look a little checked out. And now the questions that are being posed to him, I was on his Zoom call last week, and the questions that are being posed to him now are all this stuff like, well, you said one day you'd like to go back to the NFL. Would you like to go back to the NFL? Like, these are the questions that he's getting now. And so there's just a point where the water's so poisoned, you just can't try it anymore. And so I wonder if that's the case. And he's he'd been there a while now. But the reality is, you know, there's only a couple of games you have to win, and he never wins them. And he's won one bowl game. And so, yeah, I totally get where it's from. So you guys know I write the bottom 10. Apologies to Vanderbilt fans. I write the bottom 10 at ESPN.com. But I had Nebraska in there at number 10 this week, and I said that, you know, our reporters had seen Nebraska fans meeting with Tennessee fans and Michigan fans, and they had Doc Brown's DeLorean. They were trying to go back to the 90s. But I think those three programs, you know, I'm in Omaha every summer for the College World Series, and I have this kinship with Nebraska fans. And I think Nebraska fans, Michigan fans, and Tennessee fans have been in the same boat for a long time, which is, you know, why can't we get back to where we are? And the problem is that recruits don't care what you did in 1998. You know, recruits want to know what you're doing right now. And so that's part of the problem that those programs have right now is, you know, recruiting, because they don't feel super relevant.
Yeah, and that might, and of course with Harbaugh too, I wonder how much market in the NFL there is for him, you know, that'll, if he does in fact end up trying to go back there. So, Ryan, on the playoff picture, how big was that for Notre Dame? What does that do to the picture? Let me just ask you about purely team quality, because they don't have, I don't think, enough opportunity. But Cincinnati, as a team, in terms of quality, to be one of the top four at the end, what do you think of them?
Well, I think if there was ever a year when, you know, all due respect to UCF and the run they have, if there was ever a year when I call it the gang of five, you know, the non-power five conferences, is every year for one of those teams to crash this thing, this is the year, because this will be the year that every team coming to the playoff committee is going to have a completely different resume. I mean, they could be looking at eight teams that have played eight different numbers of ball games. I mean, could play have completely different records. And so if there was ever a year to do it, I think they could do it. And so, yeah, I like them a lot. I always have BYU and Cincinnati kind of hovering when I do my playoff picks every week for ESPN.com, because, again, I think this is the year. That being said, they ain't getting in. This whole system is rigged against them. And talking about UCF, if UCF wasn't going to get in, having not lost a game for 2 years and beating Auburn in a big-time January 1st bowl game and the run that they were on, if the playoff committee wasn't going to put them in, they're never going to put a non-Power 5 school in. But I would love more than anything in the world to see Cincinnati get in there.
Ryan McGee from ESPN, co-host of Marty and McGee, has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Ryan, appreciate you joining us as always, and I will definitely be DMing you again tomorrow about The Mandalorian, so look forward to that.
Hey, anytime, boys. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Ryan McGee, one of the best in the business. I thought he was setting you up there for some love, Porth, and then he just pulled the rug right out from underneath Cincinnati.
That was fair.
They ain't getting in. I mean, look, it was absolutely fair.
Yeah.
It was also absolutely fair for him to say, I would love nothing more to see Cincinnati make it to the college football playoff, because I am on board with that.
I mean, honestly, I think they might be good enough. You know, problem is we just can't find out.
When we come back, why are we seeing so many outbreaks right now among college football teams with COVID-19? We've seen it ravage the SEC this week. Why is that happening now? We'll discuss that on the other side of the break. This is Robbie and Rex Road on ESPN 102.5 The Game. 102.5 The Game and ESPN 94.9 is your exclusive home for the 2020 Masters Tournament. Tune in to 102.5 The Game for leaderboard updates today and tomorrow. And then on Saturday and Sunday, ESPN 94.9 will broadcast the Masters live both days. It's all brought to you by Music City Golf Store in Belle Meade for all your golfing needs. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We just had Ryan McGee on from ESPN, Joe, talking about the state of college football right now, particularly in the SEC, four cancellations this weekend. We did bring up, you know, Halloween a couple weeks ago, students out doing what students do in college on Halloween. Now, we don't know that that's directly what's happened here and what's causing a lot of this, but I think, you know, putting two and two together certainly could be a factor here in this. But at some point, COVID-19 was going to make its way and run through the SEC. To Ryan's point, I'm not sure we expect it to happen all on one weekend like it's doing right now, but certainly as you look not only in college football, but really nationwide right now, the numbers are not encouraging with COVID-19 and could be an interesting next couple of weeks in the SEC and college football as a whole.
Yeah, I'm sure that there's some impact with Halloween. People go out on Halloween. I don't know. I mean, I think it's just so hard to know. Again, you've got, for example, you know, the Texas A&M situation, you know, two positives, which isn't necessarily that big of a deal, but you get contact tracing and you cancel a game. So, I mean, they're being cautious. There's a quote here from Georgia's Kirby Smart I thought was interesting. Our friend of the show, Seth Emerson, who covers the Bulldogs for The Athletic. So this is Kirby Smart. Quote, "It's misleading what's out there. Everybody thinks COVID is taking over these teams. It's not. They're having mild, maybe one or two cases. The contact tracing is causing people to not play because when you travel and you go on a plane and sit in a small locker room, you sit on a bus, all of a sudden you go from having two guys with COVID to 14 guys contact traced, and now you can't play. It's not the COVID that's doing it. It's tough. It's the contact tracing, the rules and the regulations that we fall under for safety reasons." Which I wouldn't say is necessarily him complaining, but it's kind of close. There's some sentiment that way too, like why are we overdoing it?
Well, we saw, I think, a little bit of that from Jeremy Pruitt too back in the fall in terms of a lot of, you know, guys missing practice and having to quarantine for a couple of weeks wasn't necessarily due to testing positive for COVID. Contact tracing was a lot of it. And I think you heard that from Jeremy Pruitt back then as well.
Yeah. And so, you know, with the NFL, we've sort of seen a little bit of, I don't know if it's a shift, but now as more positives have happened, it's become less newsworthy, at least, right, in the NFL?
Yeah.
I mean, they're playing these games with, I mean, they contact trace, they test. Sometimes guys come back. Matthew Stafford came back last week.
Baker Mayfield's coming back this week. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but, you know, it's just such a, we said it all along, it's just so different, those two worlds, when you're talking about being on this campus, on this big Petri dish, really, in all these cases. So, as Ryan McGee said, you get to Thanksgiving, and, you know, I think it's not even confined necessarily to colleges. I know that I'm wondering, like, with our schools, what's, like, my kid's high school this week is all virtual because of teachers with COVID. And so once you get past Thanksgiving, you maybe have that stretch where everybody can kind of go to your homes and lock down and you have fewer risk of transmission.
Yeah, maybe so. And it's going to be interesting because, you know, you get around mid-December and obviously into January when the holidays come around, and not only are people around their families then, but it's also, you know, bowl games and college football playoff time coming around the corner at that point too. And Porth brought up an interesting, I think, question and point yesterday, because I think to a certain degree it's gotten this way anyway in college football, but it seems like this year, like, the college football playoff is really like the only thing that matters. Like, a lot of people are looking at this season. You're moving in some cases to a conference only schedule. In some cases you're playing five or six games, and people say, all right, is this really a legitimate season in college football. Like, with everything, all the obstacles in the way, can you really pass a whole lot of judgment on these teams and in these programs in a year like this? And it seems like the only thing people are really looking forward to right now is the college football playoff. What do you make of that idea that maybe this season viewed by some as illegitimate as a whole?
Well, I don't agree with anyone who says it's illegitimate. It's obviously a weird season. But my question back to that is also, how is that different? I mean, I've heard Nick Saban lament this, that this playoff has made it so everything else seems completely irrelevant.
Right.
Conference championships, big bowl games, you know, like going to even the New Year's Six Bowls, as we call them now, and they used to be the BCS Bowls or whatever. If the Sugar Bowl is not part of the playoff, okay, yeah, it's a Sugar Bowl. It used to be
like I'll be honest, that's
Sugar
how I
Bowl.
Feel. Like yeah. The Sugar Bowl now, if it's not in the playoff, one of the two games, I was like, yeah, okay.
It's cool. Usually a good matchup still.
Right.
But it used to be different. And honestly, even with the BCS, to me, it felt like, yes, you had this championship, and it was two teams, and it's better than what it was before. I mean, I remember when it used to be, well, Oklahoma's got to play in the Orange Bowl, and Ohio State's got to play in the Rose Bowl. Man, it'd be awesome if they played each other, but we'll see what the pollsters say about who the national championship. Yep. We don't want that, right? But I felt like with the BCS, and I don't know why going from 2 to 4 makes this much of a difference. It's just how it feels to me. Like, those other games were still huge. The Rose Bowl was still huge. The Sugar Bowl was still huge. And now it really does feel like here's the semis and then everything else is whatever. And honestly, this year, we're going to get the same teams we would have had if it was a 12-game season and they played a bunch of crappy teams and blew them out and paid them money to
– Yeah.
I mean, this does kind of expose what college football is too, doesn't it, a little bit? I mean, there's a lot of fat. There's a lot of fat that really is just there.
I mean, think about the three teams that are in this conversation every year. Clemson's in it every year. Alabama, as we know. Ohio State. I mean, those three teams are in this discussion every single year. And look, as long as Saban's at Alabama, I don't think that's going to change. Dabo, he's built up a program at Clemson where even though they've lost a game so far, they're going to get in the playoff. Like, I think they'll run the table the rest of the way. Trevor Lawrence will be at quarterback. I think they'll beat Notre Dame when they play him again. And I think Clemson and Notre Dame both will probably be in the playoff. But it's just, you look at those three programs in particular, Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State, a lot of people, I think, are tired of that. And I understand the argument of, okay, well, if you're tired of it, somebody go beat them. And I get that. But that's what college football has become. Those three teams are just so much better than everybody else on the whole. Like, I realized LSU last year got in there and just blew the doors off of everybody. But as a whole, those three teams, the last 5 to 10 years, are the gold standard in college football. And quite frankly, nobody else is really that close on a consistent basis.
Right. Yeah, I don't see it. Just they are at a different level. I don't think it's necessarily good for college football, but tell them to stop recruiting. Or like you said, beat them. I mean, you get the LSU last year, which is a great story. I mean, you go back to the first year of the playoff, you had Mariota in there with Oregon. You had Florida State in there with Winston. Here and there, you've had a Michigan State sneak in there. You've had a Notre Dame sneak in there a couple years ago.
Had a Washington one time.
That's right. That's right.
That didn't go well.
That did not go well. That's the thing. Usually, Washington, Michigan State, they usually get their doors blown. Notre Dame, they get their doors blown off, and it's like, okay, so you're in the playoff, but you're still a different tier
right.
of these teams. So that's the thing. This year, if we get the playoff, then that's not illegitimate to me. It's exactly what we knew was going to happen anyway, right?
Yeah.
It's just the trip along the way has been very weird and very different and very limited. I just don't think – yeah, illegitimate's not the word I would use. I mean, it's just – it's a brutal year. But if we get that playoff, I'm excited about it. I mean, like last year, that Ohio State-Clemson game was
great.
Yeah, it was great. And
it was probably the only great game in the playoff, but it was great.
It was, but I think honestly that Ohio State would have been a great game for LSU. Can't prove it, but I think they were a much better team to match up with LSU. But this year, we get Ohio State, Alabama, Clemson, at least two of those three playing each other.
Yeah.
I think we know we're going to have a great game. And it's like the whole season is just a prelude to that.
Just waiting on that game to happen. Yeah. I think you're exactly right. And even like the race for the four spot, it feels, I don't know if predetermined's the right word, because we know that in college football anything can happen. But I'd be shocked if Notre Dame doesn't finish off the rest of the way undefeated, and then you meet in the ACC title game with Clemson. Like, I think that's how it's going to go. And then you've got your four right there. Like, I don't think A&M's getting in at that point. If Notre Dame, their only loss is to Clemson in a title game.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to see some stuff happen. And I'm not convinced. I don't know that I'd go shocked. I'm not totally bought in on Notre Dame yet. Ian Book played above his head the other night. But
I just look at the rest of their schedule.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the best game they've got left? Boston College?
I'm looking it up as we speak.
Okay.
Right. No, they'll probably get there. But maybe we'll get that carnage. We'll get some of those upsets. And I think this would be a great year. I'm not just saying this to make Porth happy, but like a team like that, if someone's going to get blown out anyway by whoever the one is, who's the one going to be? I guess it'll probably Alabama. Be Alabama. Then, I mean, I'd rather not have to watch Notre Dame get blown out. I'd rather watch somebody else get blown out by Notre Dame.
Thanks,
yes.
Joe.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, they go to North Carolina.
Yeah, maybe that's the tough one.
Yeah.
Left on the schedule.
I mean, North Carolina's been disappointing, but I suppose they could rise up, right?
Mac Brown, baby.
That's right.
Get him in there. When we come back, an interesting debate yesterday on Jared and the GM regarding a certain star player for the Tennessee Titans. And Joe, he's had enough of it. He's ready to respond on the other side. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth taking you through this Thursday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. A game day morning. The Titans and the Colts tonight from Nissan Stadium. Thursday night football. Looking forward to that. And Joe, an interesting debate yesterday on Jared and the GM between Jared and Floyd in terms of A.J. Brown and where he fits in terms of receivers in the NFL. Now, we talked a little bit about this last week, but another big game from A.J. Brown on Sunday. And Jared and Floyd offered up some interesting comments on A.J. Brown and where he sits right now as a receiver in the NFL. Here's what they had to say yesterday on Jared and the GM.
I think A.J. has the potential to be really, really good. I think A.J. is the number one receiver of the Titans. He's the best Titans receiver they've had in a long, long time. But elite? Like, in my opinion, elite. And I pulled up because we talked about this. We talked about this yesterday on the show. And it was, okay, you know, Joe Rexrode wrote incorrectly that A.J. Brown is a top 10 wide receiver. And so we went over the guys that would be, you know, the top 10 guys. DeAndre Hopkins, Arizona. Does he do it every game?
Hopkins, yes.
He's an elite player every game. Stephon Diggs, Buffalo.
Yeah.
Elite player every game. DK Metcalf, Seattle. These guys are elite players every game. Every game. They don't go out there and have the disappearing acts like AJ does from time to time, which are why I stop short of him being an elite wide receiver.
So, Joe, what's your response there when Jared's talking about how DeAndre Hopkins, Stephon Diggs, and he didn't bring up Davante Adams, which I will overlook right now, but these type of guys, they're every single week, they're putting up the numbers, they're putting up the yards, they're putting up the touchdowns, and sometimes week to week you don't get that from A.J. Brown. What's your response?
Yeah, first of all, it's not true. In fact, as soon as he said that, I immediately went to Stephon Diggs' game-by-game stats and said, okay, here's a week where he had 40 yards. Here's another week where he had 42 yards. No receiver is week after week after week getting 8 catches for 100 yards.
You want to take a guess at what DeAndre Hopkins' numbers were this past weekend? He had 3 catches for 30 yards.
Interesting. Now, see, I still agree with those guys.
Sure.
Like, Hopkins is a guy. But first of all, so let's eliminate the idea that anyone does it week after week. It's not true, okay?
Other than Michael Thomas last year. But that was –
that's a good point.
That was, like, the far exception, not the rule.
Yeah. I mean, so here's the thing. First of all, this goes back to number one receiver, right? That was the original thing. Like, Floyd and Jared were like, he's not a number one receiver. So it's like, okay, so let's define that. I think Floyd, when he talks about this stuff, he's talking about is A.J. Brown – he's talking top tier. Like Floyd in that whole segment yesterday, so, okay, he brought up Hopkins and he brought up, you know, I think Davante Adams maybe. But, you know, those
Julio,
top guys. I agree that A.J. Brown is not there. Now, this actually got going yesterday because Kyle Tucker, my coworker, friend of the show, tweeted, there's a radio station in town, I'm paraphrasing, that keeps saying A.J. Brown isn't elite. He certainly is. And this was in response to the Titans have this stat about A.J. Brown and 40-yard touchdowns, you know, which is a really good stat. I'll find it. But, you know.
He's got 6 40-yard touchdowns or more since he came in the league. Leads the league.
And I think, Randy Moss is the only guy to do that. Yeah, so that's a great stat. It's certainly impressive. It doesn't mean everything. No stat means everything. So, anyway, Kyle tweets that, and I become the Twitter troll that I love to be, and I say CC at Jared Stillman, because, of course, Kyle's talking about that show. So then Stillman goes off about it. Here's the thing. If Floyd, if those guys are saying, and I texted Jared this, top tier or not, I agree he's not top tier. But he said I incorrectly wrote that A.J. Brown is a top 10 receiver. So let's go through them. Okay, here's what I consider to be the top tier, okay?
Okay.
Michael Thomas, DeAndre Hopkins, Devontae Adams. I'm going to go Julio Jones still, absolutely. And honestly, I could end it there. There's four, but I put Tyreek Hill there too. Tyreek Hill he's the most explosive, fast, big play receiver in the league. He's not always he's also a guy. He certainly has his weeks where he has 2 catches for 15 yards.
Right.
They have so many weapons. He's not a consistent 8 catch for 100-yard guy.
But we all know how good Tyreek Hill is.
Yeah, so I'm still putting him in the top tier. I do not put A.J. Brown there. Now, so there's 5 guys. Okay, so let's go with who else I would definitely put ahead of AJ right now. I would put Mike Evans ahead of him.
Yeah.
I would put DK Metcalf ahead of him, although I think Jared overstated him a little bit there too. You know, Stephon Diggs has had a great year this year. I can buy that. I can buy that. There's 8. Odell Beckham? I might put him ahead of AJ. There's 9. I got nobody else I'm definitely putting ahead of AJ. I'm slotting AJ in at 10. So now Jared was like, well, he's 30th in yards and all this stuff. Yeah, listen, he played – go look at the receiving leaders in the NFL. There are guys who played 9 games.
Right.
He has played 6 games. Is durability part of it? Sure, it is. But AJ Brown's missed 2 games. He's been great. He's got a TD in 5 straight games. Other guys right there, this is probably a little bit homerish because we cover AJ Brown and see him every week. You could put an Amari Cooper in there. You could put a Tyler Lockett in there. You could put a Calvin Ridley, an Adam Thielen, a Tyler Boyd. Like, a lot of receivers who are probably close. But honestly, I'm taking AJ over all those guys I just named. So I do think he's top 10. I think I was right. I think you're wrong, Jared. And I think what Floyd is talking about is the top tier. And if you're saying he's not the top tier, I agree. He's not there. Can he get there? I think he can. Is that elite? How do you define the word elite? I think that's what matters, right? People define that word differently. That's a strong word. Maybe Kyle's a little strong with that word. But top 10, I believe it. I really do. And I think Jared's going back to the playoffs last year when he got – okay, great. I mean, Derrick Henry 5 years ago had no yards in the NFL because he was in college. I don't care.
Yeah.
This year right now, what is A.J. Brown? He is better than last year. He is flat out better than last year. If you can't see that, I can't help you. And I think he's a top 10 receiver right now. So second tier, top 10, elite. Is elite just for the first tier?
I don't know. I mean, how would you define – let's switch it to quarterbacks. Who are the elite quarterbacks in the league? And we'll leave Joe Flacco out of the discussion for the sake of this. Even though he played really well on Monday night.
Elite for 1 week.
But, where does your elite quarterback list stop? Because I would – do you define receivers the same way? It's obviously different. There's more receivers than quarterbacks, obviously. But, who would be the elite quarterbacks in the game to you? Obviously Mahomes, Wilson, Rodgers. Would you consider Jackson elite? Deshaun Watson?
Yeah.
Right now, is Ryan Tannehill elite right now? I mean, you could make an argument with the numbers. Sports shaking his head no.
I would not put him in the Wilson, Rodgers, Mahomes category. I wouldn't put Lamar Jackson in that category either.
It's hard with quarterbacks too because Breeze and Brady right now, and I mean Rivers. Those guys have all. I mean, they're all going to be in the Hall of Fame, right? Doesn't that mean you're elite? But they're not now, right? I mean, I would take Tannehill over any of those guys right now. That's the thing. Floyd made the point yesterday about He said if you gave coaches a choice right now for one game, they would take T.Y. Hilton over A.J. Brown for a game.
See, I don't buy that.
I don't either. Now, I think – but again, like, whose career has been better? Not even close. Has A.J. Brown been T.Y. Hilton at his best in his career? I don't think so. I don't think he's quite to that yet, right? But right at this moment, I think T.Y. Hilton has diminished. You know, but – that's a tough thing, too, when you're rating quarterbacks. Guy's on their way down. Tannehill's on his way up. I'm okay saying, like, elite should only be top tier. And if that's the case, then I would say A.J. Brown and Tannehill both aren't elite. I would say Derrick Henry is elite. But I would say those guys aren't elite at their positions if you're confining that to the top tier. But I also think most of the league thinks Tannehill is a third-tier quarterback, and they're dead wrong.
Let's go back to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Tim from Clarksville tweets or texts in, Keenan Allen, 100% better than A.J. Brown.
Yeah, Keenan Allen is another guy that I can see absolutely being on this list.
What about Chris Godwin?
Chris Godwin? Sure. I mean, there's a lot of good guys, and a lot of guys that other people would say, yeah, I'd put him ahead of A.J. Brown right now. But you're not telling me anybody that I'm like, and also, like, are we saying right at this moment who's better, or who would you take? You know, I think it's right at this moment who's better is what it's got to be. Because A.J. Brown, I mean, I think he's got more to give. And those guys said that, you know, he can be that guy. I think he can be a top-tier guy and that he's not now. Keenan Allen? I don't know. He's fast. He is a speedster. But it's a little bit homery, I guess, but I think A.J. Brown has really expanded his repertoire this year.
I would probably, just my opinion, I'd probably say A.J. Brown is in the conversation for top 10 and not definitively top 10.
Yeah, that's fine.
Because you listed eight names that you would put over A.J. Brown, and then you're basically saying he's ninth or 10th. But you can make a case for Godwin, Keenan Allen. You can make a case for Odell Beckham. You can make a case for Calvin Ridley.
Sure.
I mean, you can make a case for A.J. Brown. So I think it's more definitive that he's top 15. But top 10, I think, is just a conversation right now.
I think I think that he could rank realistically. If someone said he's the seventh best receiver in the league, I wouldn't yell at that person. And if they said he was 15th, same thing.
Yeah.
But if he's 15th and that's where we're putting him, like Jared, seriously, I think he thinks he's like 28th. I mean,
and that's not the case.
Yeah. I want Jared, rank him for us. There's your homework today, Jared. I know it's pregame and all, but rank A.J. Brown for us, because I don't think he falls below 15. Right? I have a hard time.
I would have a hard time, yeah.
So 7 to 15 range. I think in the conversation for top 10 is a good way to put it.
Who's the best wide receiver in the league? If y'all had to pick one in the whole league right now, who would you pick?
Hopkins?
Okay.
Yeah, except can I see how Michael Thomas does as he gets going here a little bit?
Sure.
Because I think that he may – I mean, last year I thought he was the best. I thought, okay, he's become the number one receiver in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Hopkins is very reliable It's close.
To me, there's four guys.
But Adams has a case.
Yeah, there's four guys in the league I think you could take right now. That is Hopkins. Julio Jones still is at that level when he's healthy. Now, that's been a big problem for him. But when he's healthy, Julio still pretty good. Davante Adams. And, you know, I think when you're kind of going back and forth between those guys, Michael Thomas, you can't really go wrong there. But A.J. Brown has got a chance to creep up in that conversation as the years go on.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny that DK Metcalf, I would put him ahead of A.J. Brown right now. Again, yeah. The fact that those guys played together.
That dude's a freak.
Yeah. I mean, I think those two certainly both have top-tier potential written on them.
When we come back, let's get your reaction. 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025 on our phone and text lines. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Where is A.J. Brown in terms of ranking the wide receivers right now in the NFL, and what is his long-term potential. Let us know on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Where would you put A.J. Brown relative to the top receivers in this league? I don't know how, if you tier them. You know, I guess I made the argument he's probably a second tier guy, but moving up. But how do you think he rates among the best in this league?
Yeah, I'm really bullish on him because when a player can outrun leverage, and there's very few young receivers that could actually outrun DBs when they have the angle on them, like DK Metcalf's another one. And ironically, they were teammates at college. He may be in second tier, but he's closing in fast on the first tier. And it's interesting, you go back 2 years ago when the Patriots drafted N'Keal Harry in the first round. Imagine if they had A.J. Brown, you know, what a difference that could look like. So I think A.J. Brown is clearly coming into a number one. I love his work ethic. I love his toughness. I love his play speed, his hands. I don't think there's any holes in his game.
That was Mike Tannenbaum from ESPN, joined us on the show here earlier this week talking about A.J. Brown, and we're discussing now, where does A.J. Brown fit in terms of the wide receivers in the NFL? Is he top 10? Is he elite? Is he top 15? Where would you rank A.J. Brown right now? Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Our good friend Drew texts in and says, Juju Smith-Schuster a little bit better than A.J. Brown. I don't know about that.
Please.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, I think Juju's had kind of a disappointing year. I know because I am a fantasy owner of Juju Smith-Schuster. He had a big day the other day. In fact, I just traded him.
a former fantasy owner.
Yeah. Traded him for Todd Gurley. But anyway, by the way, 7-2 in the Titans Media League just beat Glenn and destroyed Kaharski. I haven't talked enough about my fantasy team. Thank you for giving me the platform to do so.
That's what I'm here for.
I think that Juju is not as good as A.J. Brown anymore. He's a good player. He's a very good player. But I think A.J. Brown is a guy who does more after the catch. And, yeah, I think with A.J. Brown, we just saw it against the Bears. I mean, he beat a double team, including one of the best safeties in the league. I think he's got more speed than some people realize. He's not just a powerful runner. I mean, he outruns people after he gets the ball, too. He doesn't just break tackles.
Yeah.
Juju was better as a number two behind AB.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
And ever since they traded AB in Pittsburgh, Juju hasn't been the same.
He has not been able to step into that role. He's not the bona fide number one that I think they've wanted him to be, and I think AJ is.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Our good friend Ron texts in, honestly, I don't think you can rank him or any other wide receiver fairly, only if they have all the same good quarterback, because if one's got a quarterback that's average and the other one is top notch, then it's not fair because one will be better because of the placement of the ball.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine, but like, then we should never rank any players in this league in any way, right?
Yeah.
I'll tell you about some players who could have been all-time great NFL players, but they unfortunately got drafted by the Detroit Lions. I mean, how many great quarterbacks are there who had crappy lines and no help around them?
Yeah.
Was Joe Montana great, or did he throw slants to Jerry Rice and watch him run for 70 yards? I mean, I think both are true.
Wow. Are you going to take shots at both Tom Brady and Joe Montana?
No, I like Joe Montana.
My goodness.
No, I mean, that's not a shot. It's just, again, like, he was great. Also, he was in an offense at the time, the West Coast offense, that was ahead of the time, and he had all kinds of support around him, and so that helped make him great, right?
Who is
so are we
going to
penalize him for that?
Who's the quarterback that you just love? You can't say anything bad about. It's not Joe Montana. It's not Tom Brady.
Jake Luton.
Jake Luton. You big Peyton guy?
I'm a Luton lunatic.
Who's the best quarterback ever?
Peyton's the best quarterback I've ever seen.
Okay.
The best quarterback play I've ever seen in my it's a subjective thing in my opinion. NFL is Peyton Manning, circa 2005-2006, right in there.
Okay,
I don't think there's ever been a quarterback who's played at a higher level than he did then.
Okay, let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Mark from Clarksville text in: give me Davante Adams all day as the best wide receiver. Brown is in the conversation for top 10, and if you can't say it's unrealistic if someone puts him in. Same goes for if someone says he's the 14th best. Outside of the top five wide receivers, you can make a case for a bunch of different guys. As for elite wide receivers, that goes to the top five. A.J. Brown around ninth right now, I feel like.
Was that me texting in? That's exactly my opinion on everything. Who was that?
That was Mark from Clarksville.
I'm with you, Mark, all the way. That's exactly right. The top tier is clear, and then there's about probably, you know, 15 guys for the next 10 spots.
So as you forecast and look ahead at A.J. Brown's career, how quickly do you think he moves up the charts and gets to maybe a point where you consider him elite, a top five guy in the league potentially? Do you think he ever gets to top five in the NFL?
I think he could. I don't know for sure that he will. I think he could. And I think the improvement from last year to this year, to me, is clear. Watch him run routes. Watch him when he's pressed. Watch the different things he's doing this year. He's got the whole picture now. And last year was there were limits on what they were doing with him, especially early in the year. He's a rookie. It's not as easy as people think to play receiver in the NFL. There's a whole bunch of coverage, recognition, and adjustments, and zone man, and how do you find the hole in the zone. I mean, there's a lot to it than just go run fast and beat this guy. You're not just playing against man coverage every snap. I think he's gotten way better. And I think that he's a legit Kevin Byard-like student of the game, and that really feeds my belief that he's going to keep getting better.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texture that says, AJ isn't a number one wide receiver yet. He still needs to show he can beat some of the elite corners and produce top numbers on a more consistent basis, which includes the playoffs. That all depends to me on what is your definition of number one wide receiver. Just like we were talking about with elite, I mean, AJ Brown, I think it's clearly a number one wide receiver. Question is what kind of, I guess, is your cap on elite, or where do you go from there?
Yeah, and I think that's where with all this has been going on for weeks now with Jared and the GM. They have called number one receiver, like, that's the same thing as elite. That's not how I think of number one receiver. Is he the team's number one receiver? Certainly he is. But is he a number one receiver in the league? What does that mean?
I think even that he is.
Yeah, like, if it just means
elite
tier,
guys, right?
Right. I don't think so.
That's a special number one, right?
Right. Number one with a star, with an asterisk, but a good asterisk.
It's like you can be a franchise quarterback without being an elite quarterback, you know?
Yes.
There's a difference there.
Marcus Mariota was a franchise quarterback.
Oh, no. My goodness.
He was.
Yeah, I guess he was a quarterback for this franchise at one point.
I mean, they were all in. He was the guy. It was built around Marcus.
When we come back, we got something fun to throw at you here this morning. Looking ahead to Titans and Colts, we're going to join the Fan Morning Show on 107.5 The Fan in Indianapolis. You'll be able to hear them here. They'll be able to hear us in Indianapolis, and we'll have some fun banter back and forth ahead of tonight's matchup in the AFC South between the Titans and the Colts. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road live from the Wholesale Link Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hey, sweetie, your mother showed me this Carvana thing for selling the car. I'm going to give it a try. Wish me luck. Me again. I put in the license plate. It gave me an offer. Unbelievable. Okay, I accepted the offer. They're picking it up Tuesday from the driveway. I haven't even left my chair. It's done. The car is gone. I'm holding a check. Anyway, Carvana, give it a whirl. Love ya.
So good, you'll want to leave a voicemail about it. Sell your car today on
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.